You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is The Rocket, Bill Latson. Welcome to another episode of Newsmakers. Today, we talk to two of the best journalists around the country. I'm talking about Richard Justice and Mark Bowman. I'm with one of the best baseball writers in America, Richard Justice. Richard, the CBA deadline is Wednesday night, going to Thursday morning, depends on what day it is. How close are we to a deal?
Thank you for the nice words, Bill. And right now, as we speak, as you and I are recording this, the owners and players are meeting. We are not close to a deal. However, I've covered all the labor agreements in the years when they had their hands around each other's throat and seemed intent on killing each other, if not the sport. 8 work stoppages in 20 years, basically. We've had labor peace for 21 years. The game has never been healthier. Players are making over $4 million. Owners are making money. So from that backdrop, I would think logic will prevail. Having said that, there is no deal, and the deadline is approaching. There haven't even been serious negotiations until the last 48 hours. The owners have been very frustrated about this. But I think beyond everything else, what differentiates this from past negotiations is that there is not one make-or-break issue. There's seemingly a half dozen loose ends on the table that reasonable people can agree to disagree and find a middle ground on, but there's a lot of loose ends to tie up. And I think the owners feel like if there's not a deal by the time the deadline hits at 12:01 a.m. Thursday morning, that they will declare a lockout and say, we have to have a deal done. We're going to put this offseason on hold until we get a deal done. And it's the international draft. How do you make it better? Everybody agrees what's going on in Latin America is not optimal, but how do you make it better? Compensation for draft picks, slotting money for draft picks, all of those things. It's not like the past, but what is like the past is that there's not a deal. The commissioners here are taking part, and they negotiated late into Monday night. They intend to go at it late into Tuesday. And let's hope something gets done.
Richard, what's the problem with the international draft? I understand that Robinson Cano, people like that, are against this. Why is that?
There's about 50 players who are taking part, and the Players Association was having its executive board. And in the past, Latin American players were criticized for not making their voices heard. Well, they're here. They're making their voices heard. Robbie Cano and Jose Bautista, others. And here's what they feel is the disparity. If you're a kid drafted in the United States, you're 18 years old or 20 years old, and if you don't like what the team has offered you, you can go back to college, you can go back to junior college and give the draft another try. In Latin America, kids are 16, 17. They don't have that option. They have not laid the groundwork to go to college. And that's unfair. You either take it, it's a take it or leave it deal. Now, the middle ground would be to increase each team has a bonus signing pool that's done. The worst team gets the most money to spend, et cetera. But the bigger market teams have just flown past that. Like the Cubs, just when Theo Epstein was building the Cubs, he just said, I'll pay whatever penalty there is and go from there. I think everybody agrees there probably should be more money spent in Latin America for players, but there has to be a way that the owners feel they have some cost certainty, that the smaller market teams feel they have a chance to compete for the Yoan Moncadas, and that the owners and that the players feel they're getting a fair shake.
Wow. Draft compensation, I get the impression that's going to be over with, which I think is a good thing. And what's going on there?
Yeah, that's the thing. The owners offered, give us an international draft, and we'll do away with the draft pick compensation. And the players rightfully said, look, the draft pick compensation affects what, maybe 10 players, something like that, the qualifying offer system, all of that. And while 30% of the game last year was either Latin America or Pacific Rim players, so it impacts a greater number, I think the owners are willing to do away with compensation, and that would make baseball free agency about as free as you can get. There might be some conniggling on roster, when you go on the roster, how quickly you go on the roster, how quickly you get to free agency and all that. Again, though, like, we're not arguing. You know, in the past years when I've covered labor negotiations, it was, we want to do away with the reserve clause. We want to have a point system that dictates your salary and all that. None of those larger issues that basically would mean the demise of the union, and are things like steroid testing that they just went, you know, head to head on for in the 2002 basic agreement. So, I think we have issues we can agree on, but I think the owners have been frustrated. They haven't been able to get answers from the players regarding what do we want. On the other hand, the deadline is the deadline. At 12:01 Thursday, there's no deal. The offseason will be put on hold, and that tends to bring people, that tends to motivate people to find some middle ground.
I mean, can you imagine you know, a season without the winter meetings if they don't get a deal done? I mean, that seems impossible.
Right, and I think this is where this is. No, I can't imagine it, and I can't imagine there being a shutdown at a time when attendance was 73 million last year. There were times you and I couldn't even dream of 73 million.
Yes,
average salary is 4.4 million. I think the minimum salary is 507.5. You know, there's competitive balance. The game is healthy in so many ways. On the other hand, players, just like everybody in the American labor force, has the right to negotiate the rules of their workplace. And that's the way I look at it. I look at it as a good thing. There were years where the owners didn't even acknowledge that there should be a players' union. We're so far past that. And the one thing we figured out in the 21 years of labor peace is that when the two sides pull on the same end of the rope, the game grows exponentially. The game is far healthier than even the most optimistic owner or player would ever probably ever thought it would get to.
Richard, I got to tell you this. I'm not going to lie to you. When I heard they're going to add an extra man to the roster, making it 26 men to a roster, my reaction was like everybody else. You got to be kidding. My reaction was the same reaction I had in 1986 when they said, we're going to make it a 24-man roster. I mean,
right.
I agree that obviously most of it will be a bullpen guy, but man, when you have so many bullpen guys, the game drags. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, and the other side of that is I think Commissioner Manfred, he's obsessed with time of game. And pace of play. It's right. Not just getting the game under 3 hours. It's getting at a faster clip. It's the pitch clock that they've seen in the minor leagues. And people who've watched games in the minor leagues with the pitch clock, you get the players get used to the pitch clock. And the game, and they do, when you go home at night after the game, you do understand the game was played at a crisper pace. So in terms of an extra bullpen guy, I think Commissioner Manfred would like to explore, how about if you bring a guy in, he's got to face two guys, he's got to face three guys, things like that. Yeah. And you know, I don't think the 26th man is as important to the players as maybe we would think, because you know, you see teams now basically use 30 players or 35. They have a couple of guys on the disabled list. You know, like I know the Orioles, when they got back to the postseason in 2012, they basically used 40-man roster. They used, you know, you play badly on Tuesday, they weren't restricted by contracts. You play badly on Tuesday, you're gone. You're back when you show you can help the club again. And I think more and more we're seeing that roster flexibility. But I guess the economists would have to work the numbers. I guess the 26th man would obviously put more money in players' pockets. But if you're taking a player off the disabled list, it would be a scratch.
I want to talk some baseball here. What do you think of the recent deal between the Mariners and the Diamondbacks? I thought the Mariners pulled off a steal, to be honest with you. And what do you think about that?
I think it was two clubs in a different part of their building. The Mariners are in a win-now mode. Jerry DePoto did an extraordinary job rebuilding that club last year. I think 20 new players, and Scott Service and his coaching staff made it work. And I think they're looking now, okay, we got Gene Segura from Arizona to play shortstop. He had 200 hits last year. We're assuming if he stay healthy, that's what he's capable of. We're going to put him up in the lineup somewhere in front of our big boys, Seager, Cano, and Cruz. and it's going to make us better. They're going to have to go out and get a pitcher to replace Taijuan Walker. I think in Arizona you have new guys in charge, Mike Hazen, and they got two kids with a high upside, they believe, Taijuan Walker and the young shortstop Ketel Marte. And it's just like I love that trade because it was a classic baseball trade. The Mariners also got a couple of young minor leaguers that various people like. It wasn't a trade about money or about pending free agency. It was just five players dealt for two general managers that see the world a different way. And I'm like you. I love Gene Segura. But I'll tell you, I still think Taijuan Walker's, I think he's still just 24 years old. He's got a chance to be good. He's one of those guys that you walk in the clubhouse, you go, pick out the number one pitching prospect in baseball, or the guy he once was. You would walk up and go, this is the guy right here. He's got a chance to be a great one. But he's not there yet, and the Mariners believe they're good enough to win the American League West and keep going after that, and they think Gene Segura will have an immediate impact.
Richard, thank you so much for being with me, and we hope to have you again.
Okay, Bill. Thank you.
I'm with Mark Bowman. He's a beat writer for MLB.com. He covers the Braves. Mark, I got to tell you, I look at the Braves the last 2 years. I love the moves that they've made. I love them. And, you know, the steal for Ender, Inciarte, Dansby Swanson. How did the Braves make that deal against the D-backs? I don't get it. I mean,
well,
it was a steal.
Well, I mean, that's certainly – we go back a year at this time leading up to the winter meetings. I was probably writing a story a year ago today that's saying, you know, the Braves shouldn't trade Shelby Miller because they're not going to get the value that they need to get for him. And, of course, we all know what happened. We were all shocked to see what kind of return that they got. I mean, it was something that certainly, when I didn't think it was possible to get what would be needed to get him, I certainly didn't expect to look at that and go, well, this is more than anybody could have ever imagined. And I think you have to credit that and this whole rebuild to the diligence of General Manager John Coppolella, because I think that he basically goes about everything. There's no mountain that he's not willing to climb. He probably is persistent as any, you know, executive I've ever been around, probably to the point to where he gets to the point where some GMs probably get a little bit tired of hearing from him or seeing his text. But at the same time, he and John Hart had a vision when they started this rebuild. It was painful for a portion of that for them and the fans. But I think, as you pointed out, that Dansby Swanson trade, it changed everything. It was the turning point within this rebuild, because, you know, not only did they get a Gold Glove leadoff hitter with Ender Inciarte, they get Dansby Swanson, who, along with Matt Kemp last year, both of them arrived at different parts in August. I think they were the two keys to why the Braves, you know, won 20 of their last 30, 12 of their last 14. Obviously, Freddie Freeman was the MVP, but what those two did to lengthen the lineup, provide protection, in Kemp's case, provided a glimpse of where this team could go this year, this lineup. I don't think you should need to be, you know, make any rash expectations about where this team can go, but I think that they certainly can enter this year with, you know, legit optimism that they can be a 500 team. And then once you get to that point, you know, the difference between an 82-win team and a 90-win team is, you know, one win a month. You never know. Once you get to that level, you're just another step away from taking that step and becoming a postseason contender.
Mark, I spoke to Dan Uggla 2 years ago. You also know him. And he told me that the Braves made a killing when it came to acquiring prospects. And I'd like to know, which prospects do you expect to help the team in 2017?
Well, I think that, you know, Dan's right. I mean, obviously, that's what this whole rebuild's been about. I mean, from the days that they Traded Jason Hayward and Justin Upton, Evan Gaddis. That's what this has all been about. And, you know, when you ask Hart or Coppola, the reasoning behind how they formed the blueprint for this rebuild, and they look back at what Bobby Cox did as a general manager for the Braves in the late 80s, what John Sherrill's continued, what John Hart did, some of what John Hart did there in Cleveland. It's all centered around this young talent. If I look at prospects who I'm looking forward to seeing this year, I think that, obviously you want to see where Dansby Swanson goes. What we saw him for the last 6 weeks of last season provided indication he's ready. And in terms of pitchers, there's a left-handed reliever, A.J. Mentor, that I'm looking forward to seeing what he looks like in camp. He put up dominant stats last year coming off of Tommy John surgery, though. He did not pitch more than, once every 3 days. So we know this is a live arm. I tell you what, Aaron Blair's a guy that I haven't seen him pitch since that last weekend. But that last weekend of the season, he had 10 strikeouts against the Tigers, working on a slider that he and Roger McDowell, it took him a whole season to get a feel for it, but at least he entered the offseason on a good note. I've seen some pictures that Aaron has tweeted. It looks like he's in much better shape or than he might have been throughout much of this year. This is a guy who was a top 50 prospect last year when the Braves got him. Maybe he doesn't fit that prospect status anymore, but at the same time, I think we can all agree that he fits that mold of that young guy who can make a significant difference moving forward within this system.
The Braves are showing they're not playing games. I mean, they recently picked up Alex Jackson from the Mariners. What do you think of him?
Well, I mean, it made perfect sense. You compile all this pitching. You get Rob Whalen was part of the deal that you got with when you sent Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe to the Mets. Max Posey was a guy that he's a very intriguing prospect. He's 6'8", right-hander, great strikeout to walk rate this past season. But at the same time, these guys, you've got so much pitching, you don't have a lot of hitting in the system. Why not try to first of all, they were trying to clear a 40-man spot. That was one of the motivators behind the deal for Sean Rodriguez. But at the same time, in the process, what you're doing is you're using this pitching, going to get a hitter who he certainly hasn't lived up to the expectations that were set when he was taken with the 6th overall pick in the draft in 2014. But he's 20 years old. Let's see. I mean, where he's going from here, and there's already talk that he could be moved back to the catcher's position. I always say that is, okay, that sounds good, but if it was that easy in a simple solution, the Mariners would have had him as serving as a catcher. So it all comes down to how he hits, the change of scenery, being around some different hitting instructors here. One benefit the Braves have that, some fans might have forgot about is Greg Walker's still around this organization on a regular basis, and he's done a lot of great things with hitters over the years with the White Sox, and even his short tenure here with the Braves. It's quite a challenge there having to deal with Melvin Upton and Ugla and some of the guys that struggled there during his tenure as the hitting coach. I don't think there were too many hitting coaches that could have done a great job there, but Greg is still doing a great job as a hitting, roving hitting instructor at the minor league level. And one thing he's really doing is he has a great eye for talent leading up to the amateur draft. He's helped helped them make some decisions on some guys, namely Austin Riley. There was some talk about Austin Riley being a pitcher coming out, and right now it's looking like Austin Riley could be a future third baseman here in Atlanta within the next few years.
You have Matt Kemp, who's going to have his first full year with the Braves. I'm not going to lie to you, Mark. Last year, he looked out of shape. He drove in 100 runs. I'll give him that. But he looked out of shape. It looked like he couldn't play the outfield at all. How much do you think he will help this team going into 17?
So it all depends on what Matt Kemp wants to do. I mean, it's, you know, there's no doubt that as you age, you've got to spend a little bit more time on your body. I don't think he would, he certainly would admit that he needs to lose some weight. And, you know, whether he's able to lose the 25 to 30 pounds has been talked about, we'll see. I mean, look, if he loses 10 to 15, just becomes a little more mobile, maybe more importantly, takes some unneeded stress off of the joints and is able to stay healthy and keep his bat in the lineup for 145-plus games, 150-plus games. You know, that's what matters, and that's what should matter to him at this point of his career. He put up the big numbers. He can swing the bat. But at the same time, you've got to remember that it's not just about, you know, being able to losing the weight to be able to make the plays out there in left field. It's you've got to lose that weight just to be able to stay healthy and stay on the field, especially when you're in the National League where you're going to have to be playing defense to be in that lineup.
The Braves are going to play in a new stadium, and how much are you looking forward to it? And what do you expect from the stadium? How will it play?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we're all looking forward to seeing how this stadium plays. The one thing that's, you know, it looks like it's pretty fair. Right center field is the wall's a little bit taller. I'm sure Freddie Freeman would have liked that. You know, there's probably going to be a couple of times he wishes that wall wasn't quite as tall. But it all comes down to wind patterns. You know, you've seen it. How many different stadiums you've gone to throughout this country, Bill, where you know, different parks play. It's not just the dimensions; it's the wind patterns. I saw it last year. You know, I have not personally been at the Cell all that often there in Chicago. You first look, you don't just say, "Hey, look, this is the hitter's paradise." But you watched how the ball traveled there during that weekend, and you thought, "Wow, this is, you know, it's something different." I think that it all comes down to getting a feel for just how the stadium plays. And, you know, I think that you look at what they have there with Nick Markakis and Freddie Freeman being left-handed sluggers. I think it's going to play relatively fair. I think the Braves have always based their organization around, or, you know, their plans around that. That's how Turner Field, I'd say that was about as fair a park as I'd seen in the league over the last 20 years. You know, if you hit the ball well, it was a home run. If you pitchers made pitches, they were able to keep it in the park for the most part. So I think that they try to do that. It'll have a little bit different look, but I think it all comes down to how the wind patterns play out once we see how the ball travels there.
Mark Newman, thank you so much for being with me. I want to tell baseball fans, read this guy on MLB.com. He's one of the best, and thank you so much.
All right, Bill. Thank you.
That's going to be all for Newsmakers. I want to thank all my guests. I want to thank my producer, Danny Wexelman, and my editor, Din Mann. Thank you so much.